Hello, guys.
Hello. Yes. Well, sorry for the starting late. We had some technical difficulties, and there are some guests that still have. Oh, there's John Bryant. There's some still have some hard time joining in. So either they're going to try to join in later, or it's going to be just us. So let me please introduce first to we got Seymour Duncan. We got Greg Cock over here. We got John Bryant, which is probably a lot of people don't know, but John Bryant is the son of the great Jimmy Bryant. And we got Cody Young over here that's going to help moderate.
Hello.
and try to take care of everything else.
Like Paul Rose just.
Say what?
Paul Rose just came in.
Yeah, Paul Rose is just says, hey, you know, we can have him join in if he wants to. But let me start this, guys. It's been kind of like a weird...
Eric.
Eric Ingram. Eric Ingram.
Yeah. Hey, everybody.
Eric is actually working with me. He's a great engineer. And he's been working with me for the last, I don't know, maybe five years almost right now, I think.
Yep.
We've been
having some fun on some projects, yep.
Right. So, hey, I want to start with something kind of I had on my mind for a long time, and that's for Greg.
Uh-oh.
Yes. So, you know, Greg, Seymour and I think, well, Seymour knows you way more than me, but I think we met, gosh, it's almost 17 years ago, if you believe it or not.
That's insane.
It is insane. But there's one thing about you that never change, and I need to know how you do it and what you drink to be so happy and just have good time every single time I see you.
It's because I'm hung like a mastodon.
But, you know, seriously, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen you upset, not laughing or not joking around. It's like either whenever we meet that name, it's always like a fun. It's like, where's Greg? I mean, we need to see his big smile. You know? And then,
you see me at the good times.
Oh yeah.
Well, I'm pretty well. You know, I'm in a good mood most of the time. The only time I really kind of lose my mind is with technology. Like you were just going through with the
yes.
I go from zero to like insane person in like 3 seconds.
I don't believe that.
So as long as you don't see me dealing with technology, I'm usually in a good mood.
Well. But you know, I mean, I'm watching your videos and I'm watching you, and you do videos every single day, at least for the last 2 years. And darn it, I never seen you upset once. Right, Seymour? I mean, have you ever seen Greg upset? Oh. Did we lose Seymour?
We lost Seymour's audio. Sorry.
Yeah, Seymour, we can't hear you. Cody, can you send Seymour a message telling him we can't hear him?
Sure. It looks like
he might have a technical difficulties right now. He probably pressed on a mute or something. Seymour. Well, okay. Well, then we'll hear from Seymour later. But Greg, do you know John Bryant?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think when we first met. It was a long time ago, too. It was at a NAMM show a long time ago.
Yes. Yeah.
Of course, I was a big fan of his dad, so we started talking about all that kind of stuff. And then he came out to see our band when we played out in Long Beach. That was January of it was January of 2020 before the pestilence struck.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Wait a minute. I got, who is this? John D'Amato and Kevin C. So, John.
Yes.
Well, first of all, good to see you. Good Lord. You know, it's been for, I know you came, you visited me a couple of years ago, but it's almost like we're all waiting for NAMM. It's like a reunion kind of a thing. And it sure looks like it's been a long time ago, right?
Well, it feels like I'm at a NAMM show, mini NAMM show right here, seeing my friends. And, you know, the only guy that's got one name up is Seymour. You know, he's that's all he needs, man. It's good to see Seymour. Man, I love you, Greg. Yeah, that first time we met, I just couldn't believe what I was seeing with you, man. And you still blow me away every time I see you.
Oh, well, thank you.
So, Seymour, are you with us?
I can hear you.
There he is. Back.
So anyway, back to the other question. You know, I was asking you, do you ever remember Greg not happy or laughing? And we lost you, so...
I said I've never seen Greg or heard Greg hit a wrong note. You guys, he's a master, man, I'll tell you. Oh,
you're too kind.
No, you're a great player, man.
Boy. Yeah. You know, I thought about it. If there was a Comedy Central for guitar players, I think you're going to be the king of comedy. Ah. Because if, you know, and I'm talking now to the people that's seeing us. You guys need to see Greg because it's almost like his face is in tune with his fingers. it's just hilarious. Yeah. I don't know how you do it.
A misspent youth. That's what happened.
hold on.
We've got a few people in the chat here. Michael Burrell.
That's my buddy Michael Burrell from Minneapolis.
Hey, yeah. Rick Berthaud and Paul Rose.
Paul Rose.
Yeah. Paul Rose from Paul, you know, Greg, do you know Paul Rose? He's from England. Do you know him?
I don't know if we met in person.
Well, you better, you know, go and check his YouTube. I mean, he's a phenomenal player. I mean, he, you know, I think Seymour, we call him kind of like a, you know, the sweet playing, right? He got like a really nice tone.
Yeah,
really
yeah.
Beautiful melodies when he plays, you know. Say what?
He's always a great player too. Man.
Yeah,
watching him and he's great videos all the time. And Rick Berthaud, he worked at Fender for a long time, and now he does a lot of work for us at the factory, does machining and everything. And he's got a blues band out of Las Vegas, and he's going to be. Having a new CD out and everything too. I wish I could have played on it, but my hands are so bad that it makes it difficult, you know.
Hey Cody, can you send Paul the link? See maybe he can join us.
Yeah. Let me see if I can Paul send can him hear a message me, here.
If you have, I think I send the link to the stream on social media. So if you have it. Try to log in and we try to bring you in. I talked to, first of all, I don't think Richard Bennett will be able to join us. He had some major, I was with him on the phone and he was trying to log in a couple of times and I don't know what happened. And it looks like Steve also had some problems. I have no idea what's going on. Have you used this before, Greg? The Restream thing?
Restream is what we use to do all of our live streams. So what's nice about it is because you can go on several platforms at the same time. So
right. So yeah. Are you saying it works better on Chrome rather than Safari?
That's what I was told. Yes.
Okay. Well, maybe that's the issue. So I don't know. John. So I think John has a little surprise for all of us. I talked to him earlier today and he asked if that's going to be cool. And I tell him, are you kidding me? Yes. So John, you want to take the stage and.
Well, you know, these gentlemen right here, it's probably have seen, I mean, I just wanted to share. I just wanted to share a couple of dad's guitars or whatever.
Yes.
I mean, it's just for fun. Right. So,
yeah.
But I can't hear John at all.
Just just realize that, that people out there that I'm a drummer, so I'm not going to play the guitars. I wish Greg was here right now. He could just take over. But I'll be right back. I'll be right backstage.
Okay.
But so you can hear us, right?
No, who, Seymour?
Here I am.
Seymour, yeah, can you hear us? I couldn't hear John at all. Not,
oh, it's weird. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
this is...
Which one is that?
This one is
tell
a
Cody, no.
59 Tele. That's
audio settings. I don't have where the heck to go there.
That's
okay, let me try this. See here.
My brother had when he was younger. And what my brother did,
that's
was
weird. Yeah, I can't hear John now.
Seymour, we can hear you talking more over John.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I was answering Cody. Cody was texting. Okay. Plus,
Seymour, you need to get out of that house more.
I don't know where to go. I have no idea.
It's going to be a comedy show today.
Well, this, you know, I mean, just, I mean, seriously, I mean, Sage, you're doing this, and I think it's great. And you know, this is the first time you're doing this streaming. So this is all good. I mean, the next ones that you do are going to be just even better. So all this comical stuff is great. So,
yes.
Oh, there's Steve. You guys talk, and I'll see what Steve wants. Go ahead.
But, so this thing my brother had
testing
when he was younger,
one, two.
And he painted it white, believe it or not. And Mark Kendrick at the custom shop actually had it for 3 years and painstakingly restored it because he opened it up and found the red inside, and just a beautiful playing guitar.
Awesome.
It sounds amazing. Just, you know, like I said, Greg, I wish you were here to play it, but beautiful guitar. So
does your brother still play or no?
Oh, heck, man, this sounds great. The neck
is. Does your brother still play?
Pardon me?
Does your brother still play?
Well, you know, I thought he was going to be on. Maybe he's on watching, but he does play some. Yep. And he's got some guitars. I've got other guitars here. I'll show you. This is kind of a fun guitar to look at. This was the prototype Magnatone that they made early 60s, mid 60s, which was on the cover of one of my dad's albums. And you can see that this they had to do the photo shoot for the album cover, so they quickly put on this decal Magnatone with that M. It's kind of crazy, but you know, just a really cool guitar. It's really light. I had this thing. I gave it to the Hard Rock, you know, to display in Hollywood. And after about 6 years, I called them up and I said, "Hey, man, you know, I need to get that guitar back." And they couldn't find it. So little upset, but they finally found it in Texas. So I got it back. And but this is a treasure. And this one actually, you know, does not play. So
oh, it doesn't.
Yeah, you can plug it in with one pickup. It you get some, you know, sounds out of it, but the neck still feels good. And it's funny, kind of it's a real thin neck, and I'm sure Dad just you know, must have beat this thing up quite a bit. So yeah. All right, I'll send it back to you guys. I'm here as a fan of you guys. So I mean, I'll just, you know, let you guys take it over, man. Paul Rose, thanks. I, you know, appreciate the love for, you know, towards my dad, and he was one of a kind for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, hey. I see Paul Rose just joined us, but we don't see him. I don't see his video, but
no, he hasn't. It doesn't look like his camera's.
Yeah, did you send him a message?
Okay. Just,
So John, you know, I'm sorry. I was on the phone with Steve. He was trying to. Steve Trovato was trying to get in, and he couldn't. So, which guitars did you show them? I mean, don't show it again. Just
yeah, no,
briefly.
It's the one is just a Tele, you know, custom from a long time ago that, you know, got Mark Kendrick, you know, at the custom shop redid and brought back to life. But the other one's a Magnetone from the 60s. It's just kind of a couple guitars. I got others, but I'd love to hear some stories from somebody else, you know. And yeah. I'd love to see who else is on this session today as far as people that are coming in from around the world.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, Sage.
I think we have Steve Parcell, right? Oh, yeah. And his audio is. What is going on today?
Activity.
Steve, we can't hear you. I mean, you sound like an alien from another.
Time for full disclosure.
Yeah, full disclosure, right.
Hey, Sage, Paul is saying that that his mic and camera have been denied. Are you able to control
let people in? I clicked them. He's on. I'll try to click them on again. But, yeah, I don't know. Let's see. Paul Rose. No, he's gone. And there he is again.
He has returned.
Yeah, I don't know why. Good grief. I don't know. I'm going to have to talk to Restream tomorrow and see what the heck is going on. Now, where Seymour go?
He stood up and he walked off camera momentarily.
Okay. I was just about to ask him something to tell us, but I guess, okay, fine. So, Greg.
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you something, you know, for us and people who are watching us. So ever since COVID, I guess, you know, probably live shows were kind of like diminished to almost nothing, right?
Right, exactly.
So do you do lessons online? What do you do during this time other than just making us laugh on camera?
Well, you know, all the stuff I did for Wildwood Guitars, I would always go out to Colorado, you know, once a month for 4 days. And as soon as COVID started, I couldn't do that.
Right.
So they started sending me guitars to do live streams with from my orange room here. So
okay,
I started doing live streams maybe the last week in March of 2020 and have been doing them ever since. So I do two for Wildwood every week. And then I do two for Fishman. Fishman was already kind of pivoting to have me do stuff virtually anyway, so this just kind of forced the issue.
Right.
So they started sending me gear because I'm a total, as I alluded to earlier, technology and I are let's say we have issues. So
yeah.
I mean, I initially was just going live with a laptop and like a USB mic, and then we switched to, I mean, now it's like we got a studio set up here so we can do full band live streams, and I got a guy that zaps into my computer from Boston who does sound and switches cameras, although I do have a little foot switch where I can switch the different camera angles. And so I do 4 to 5 live streams a week. And as a result, I mean, all the different companies I'm affiliated with, you know, although we haven't been able to do live shows, people are buying gear like it's going out of style. So
right,
that aspect of it's been great. So I've been doing that. And then I started, I do a bunch of Skype lessons. I started my own podcast. I've done a bunch of that stuff. And that's kind of Wildwood and Fishman sponsored. And so I've been doing that. And so we started to do a few live gigs starting in September. We started to do stuff again. And then COVID fired up again. So I had a tour of Europe. We had to cancel that. So I'm back to just, you know, doing the live streams, continuing with that. But, you know, it's been really, really good. It's sad. I mean, as much as COVID's been awful for a lot of people, for me, it's been great because I've been able to do these live streams from the house and people have been tuning in. So it's been good.
That's great. I see Paul is with us. Paul, can you hear us?
Paul,
can you hear us?
Well, we can see him. We still can't hear him.
Yeah, we can't hear you, Paul. So, Cody, can you communicate with him so I can go on with the other guys and see when we can get him?
Yep.
So, Greg, so it looks like you're pretty, maybe even busier than before.
Well, you know what? It's kind of funny because, as I said, I'd go out to Wildwood, you know, 4 days a month, and we would shoot a lot of videos.
Right.
And you know, I would do 20 to 25 videos a day for those 4 days straight, right?
So, wow. It's crazy.
You know, the guitars are coming here. I mean, there's not as many, but right. So I'm a shipping and receiving department. And then I do, you know, the live streams, and I do individual shots with the guitars, and then yada, yada, yada. So it's pretty busy. I mean, I'm usually gone between 125 and 150 days out of the year on most years.
Right.
So I've been home, which I've been enjoying, but I do, you know, the 4 to 5 live streams a week and all the other stuff on top of it. So it's a different kind of busy, but I'm sleeping in my own bed and I dig it. I got to be honest. You know,
yes.
You know, the other thing, I always mention this about going on the road, is that, you know, you're always putting your expenses on your credit card, and you get reimbursed for all that stuff. But a lot of times that money doesn't go for the credit card. You end up spending it on something else. So next thing you know, you got, you know, a bunch of money on your credit card. And now since I've been on, I got like zero credit card balance. You know, I'm like, I can't wait to go on the road again. I'm like, wait a minute.
I bet. That's pretty cool. Now, Seymour, are you back with us, right? Yeah, no voice again. We can't hear you.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Is that Paul?
Yes, we can hear Seymour.
Good evening.
Paul.
Hello.
Hey, Paul, how are you? Good to have you.
Nice to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me. It's I kind of invited myself. I was so excited when you sent me that text yesterday. I said, oh, great, I want to be a part of that. So forgive me for pushing in, but I just was excited to be a part of it with you.
No, it's great, you know, and we were supposed to have Richard Bennett, and he had some technical difficulties coming on. So, I mean, it looks like, I don't know, the universe today is trying to give us a little bit of a hard time. But, hey, you know, we'll do what we can. Yeah. But, you know, I just told Greg about you a little bit, and I told him to go ahead and check you out on YouTube. And I remember Seymour was telling me about you years ago, and he said, Sage, hey, you know, you got to go on YouTube and check that guy, Paul Rose, because you're going to love his tone and his playing. And I think the first video I saw was like, oh, my God, yes, this is the kind of stuff I love. And that's what I told Greg over here, that he will really enjoy what you do.
I got it dialed in. I already looked it up. I got it ready to go, Paul.
Well, Greg, nice to meet you, Greg. Obviously, I'm well aware of who you are, and I've seen your stuff online, and it's fantastic. And
thank you.
So it's a pleasure to meet you, and it's great to hook up. And you know, maybe we can stay in touch. I don't know. Is NAMM happening? Is NAMM going to happen, or is it off? Or how are they doing it this year?
They canceled the summer NAMM altogether, then the winter NAMM now going to become a one summer NAMM in LA, and they move it to June.
Right.
So no more January NAMM. It's going to be June.
Right.
And that's it. It's going to be once a year. So now, I'm not sure I'm going to go this year. I mean, we have to see how COVID is doing. Greg, are you going?
Well, we'll see what happens. I mean,
we don't know. I mean, I guess we have to play by ear and see how it goes.
Well, I'm going.
Who is it?
I'm going. I live right here, so I'm going.
Oh, John. I was like, who's it?
Well, I will say that, you know, being in Wisconsin, it was always nice to go to Anaheim in January.
Well, you know, I tell you what John will do. It doesn't matter if NAMM happened or not. He's going to book a room for 4 days, and he's, like, going to show up, and he's like, nobody's here. He's going to go back home. Right, John?
We had some fun. We had some fun.
Yes, absolutely.
It's nice to see Seymour again. I haven't seen you for a few years, Seymour. I think the last time I saw you would have been in Santa Barbara. I can't remember. Is it 4 years ago or 5 years ago or something like that? But it's nice to see you again. I'm in Newcastle, which is we're about an hour south of the Scottish border. So I'm very much out of touch with what's happening in the US. I wish it wasn't so, but so, you know, here we are, I guess.
So are you in Newcastle, what's considered to be the Spanish city?
Do you know, the Spanish city, we used to go there when we were kids, the one that Mark Knopfler sings about.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I was just about to say that.
It's about 3 miles down the road from here.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. You know, it's such a shame that we couldn't get Richard Bennett with us. You know, Richard been with Mark Knopfler for about 30 years now, so right. I'm sure we would have heard some cool stories, but I guess, he had some computer stuff. Paul, do you know Chris Rea?
Not personally. I've met him, but not personally. But I certainly know who you mean, yeah.
Anybody here know who Chris Rea is? I know Seymour does.
Yeah.
Greg, you know Chris Rea?
I don't know him personally, but I definitely know who he is.
Right. Seymour, are you back with us?
We're still working on his audio.
Yeah. Okay, I got you.
We got
Steve again with that.
Aliens.
Your alien voice is going through like crazy over here. Exactly. Yeah. I have no idea. I don't know. It's like every time you open your mouth, you sound like you're like a War of the World alien thing. By the way, guys, you know, as we go, I want to make it clear to the people out there and also for us, if anyone doesn't feel comfortable answering anything or talk about anything, just say it out loud and we're going to move on. Mm-hmm. And then if you have to leave, let us know and we'll be sad losing you, but I just want to make it easy on all of us. Paul, I know you also, you know, you probably saw Greg is online every day. I don't know. I think, Greg, do you wake up at 5 and go to bed at 5 a.m., like 5 from 5? Every time I turn on Facebook or Instagram, it's like, boom, there's Greg.
Well, in the morning, I'll usually sit down and do a quick one for Instagram. And it's just whatever in the moment inspires me or doesn't
inspire
me. Yeah, and I'll just do like a little snippet and then out the door I go. And and it's just for the fun of it. You know, one of the things about Instagram that I like is that, you know, if I can play something that I can stand for 60 seconds or 25 seconds, whatever the case is, then that's a good exercise.
Right. Yes.
Like a play something where I can listen back and go, that's tolerable. I'll throw that up there and see what happens. And there's, you know, usually, you know, sometimes it's to promote gigs or whatever the case may be, but you know, 90% of the time it's just for the fun of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'll usually do that before my morning walk, or of course it's so damn cold now I'm not walking anywhere, but, I don't think it sucks, but when it gets to be cold here and there and the snow's on the ground and the ice, the walks become perilous. So then I got to start curtailing my eating activity, or I'm going to be like Jabba the Hutt until like March.
Where are you, Greg? Whereabouts are you in the U.S.?
I'm in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Right, okay. Up north, yeah.
Yes, so it gets a bit cold.
Paul, so do you also, like Greg, staying, trying to keep the YouTube channel? Because I know you do that almost every day, right?
What I do is I do one live show every Sunday night, which, incidentally, any one of you people who want to come and join me, you're welcome to be a guest with me. I would be delighted to have any of you.
Awesome.
But I do like an hour and a half, 2 hour show. And then I do kind of like something during the week, but I also chop them up. It's like one number goes really well. If I thought I played really well there, or that sounds really nice, I'll cut it out and I'll put it out as a standalone, you know, but, I've invested a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of brain power into trying to get the quality of picture and audio as high as I possibly can with what I have. And basically everything that Greg said, I completely identify with. Like, we've got 70 gigs and they've been picked up and moved and then picked up and moved and picked up and moved. And it's driving me crazy. And you've got to say to yourself, when? Please. God, right. In the very, very, when are we going to get moving again? You know, I've joined basically Rory Gallagher's band. Obviously, Rory Gallagher isn't with us anymore, obviously, but right. I'm in his band with his bass player and drummer. And we're going to be playing in the US. We've got all of this stuff. And we're just sitting in the bloody house waiting, right. You know? Oh, yeah. And this is the longest I've been in one place since I was 16. You know?
Wow.
I was always going somewhere and doing something, even if it's just London, Leeds, Glasgow, Edinburgh. But it's like, well, you know, what am I saying that we guys all out there don't already know? You know, it's a big challenge, this.
Yeah. You know, I can share something with you guys that, you know, the people that are close to me, they know that, but I guess I can just share it out to the world and all that. My wife has an underlying condition, so because of COVID, I have to be very, very careful. And, you know, although we're vaccinated and everything, I still have to be careful. Mm-hmm. I stayed in my shop over here since March 2020. Mm-hmm. So I think the only time I left the house was this past July, when we before Delta was kind of like a big thing. We thought we're like, okay, that's it, we're over. I think we went out to a restaurant one time, but that's the only time in 2 years that I literally left the house. I mean, last time I saw a friend was 2 years ago. So that affected my mental stage pretty bad. And the one thing that I'm upset is that I didn't touch my guitar for 2 years.
Ah.
And it's funny because the guitar and music was the only thing in my life that actually helped me through hard times.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time in 40 years that I couldn't hold a guitar. I mean, I'm picking the guitar, and like 3 seconds later, I can't do it.
Really?
So I guess, you know, I guess whatever we were going through for the last 2 years affected people different ways, you know.
Right.
I'm just hoping I'm going to get out of it soon because I just miss my baby.
Mm-hmm.
No, and I'm sure you guys, the guitar players, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know,
yes.
Seymour, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, no, there you are. Oh, here you are. Hey, okay.
Hey,
we can hear
hallelujah.
You.
Hallelujah.
He's back.
So you can hear me?
Seymour.
Yes.
Now that we can Cody's finally ask you a question or two.
Yeah, no.
Okay, there we go. I thought I lost you again. So, hey, can you maybe share a cool story with us from your... I don't want to say how many years in the business, but a long time. Maybe something cool that you remember.
I remember, you know, when I was probably about 12 or 13, my uncle Bid Furness, who was a trumpet player for Paul Whiteman's orchestra back around the Philadelphia area, he took me to Steel Pier in Atlantic City, and which was a pretty neat place. That's where they had the jumping horse into the big barrel. Has anybody ever seen a jumping horse? So that was from back in Jersey. So anyway, I got into this auditorium in Steel Pier, and they put me in the front row. And all of a sudden, I hear down, and the curtains open up, and it's less.
There we go. I lost him again.
Oh,
I think he said Les Paul.
Les Paul, yes. Just right. Gonna say Les Paul.
Seymour, we lost you again. We heard Les, and that's it. Oh, damn!
Oh, damn. Yeah,
I think
give me a break,
guys. I think what's happening is there's a feedback loop on Seymour's side. So if we talk, it cuts him off. So let's try this, Seymour.
No.
Test your mic, Seymour.
The demon has returned.
Yeah, the demon is back.
Steve.
Can you hear us? Okay. Steve Purcell. Do you guys hear me? Anybody?
I hear you. Yes,
yeah,
I hear
okay.
You.
I wish we could hear Steve.
Yeah, it looks like there's a few people in here that have issues with their microphone. It looks like Steve is frozen. Let me see.
Look at all the guitars in the background of Steve. Look at all those guitars in the background.
Yeah.
I want to try something here. Steve, if you mute yourself and then we stay quiet, let's see what happens with Seymour's audio.
Let's try that.
Somehow Steve is frozen on my side. I have no idea. Well, okay. This is a hell of a live stream. But who cares? It's COVID time, so
it's COVID time.
I don't care. Eric Ingram, do you have any question for the people around?
Oh, wow. No direct questions. I'm just glad to meet you and hear about you and the different things you do and your history. So I'm enjoying it.
The people that, I don't know if I mentioned in the beginning, but Eric and I work together for quite a few years and he's doing audio and studio equipment on the side. But Eric, tell us what's your main thing that you do.
On the audio side, what I do is design equipment for recording studios. I focus mostly on mic preamps has been one of the emphasis that I've had over the years. But now I've done equalizers and then a channel strip is one of the recent products. So I really come from a background of being a musician first since I was a kid, and had a stint playing in bands and recording and touring around a little bit, nothing like what you guys do, by any stretch of the imagination. But when I got out of that angle, I put more of my energy into designing gear. I was always very curious about the equipment that we used in the studio or what makes things sound the way they do, trying to connect up what I hear and like with how do you make gear that can do that. And over the years, I'm also a trained electrical engineer. I did study that in school. So I had sort of these dual paths going on at the same time, being an electrical engineer for various companies and then also being this musician, and then started up my little side business to try to connect up the worlds, connect everything up and just apply the love of music and the knowledge of engineering and try to offer something, to give something back, in some sort of way. So that's kind of how the company started. And I just, just fascinated with audio gear and sounds and music. And in the course of my travels, I ended up meeting Sage in Nashville. And so we just hit it off really well. And then over time, talked more and more about different gear possibilities and just sort of naturally fell into working together on some things for his business. So we've had a good time and we've got some cool things in the works.
Yeah, and the thing that I like about Eric, when we start working together is the one thing I'm proud of with the stuff that I build, I pay a lot of attention to details, and we sometimes can spend 2 years on just one design, because we're looking deep into the details. I mean, in fact, Eric and I were just finishing a project that we started working 3 years ago. And about 2 weeks ago, I sent him one of the prototypes and I said, Eric, listen, there's something here that I hear that I don't like. And he's getting it. And he's like, well, I don't hear it. So, But I'm very, very tuned to details. And Greg, I don't know if you know, and I don't know if John knows, and a lot of people don't know, I'm deaf on one side.
Oh.
Ever since I was 4 years old, completely deaf. But what happened is my other ear became so sensitive to hear stuff that maybe normal people don't hear it. So in a way, it helped me. When I'm doing my designs, it's because I hear the details. I hear stuff that are hidden that maybe you're not going to notice right away, but I can hear them.
Right.
And the cool thing about Eric, that he's not frustrated with me, because Eric, how many times I've sent you stuff? It's like, dude, man, I hear this. It's like, well, I don't hear it, but I don't care. You don't hear it, but I do. So he, you know, he really, he's patient with me, but his knowledge about the stuff that he does helped me a lot and actually improve everything that either I know or even the stuff that I build, improve it tremendously. So I'm really happy that Eric joined the force, you know what I'm... joined the force, so...
Yeah.
But anyway, John, how are you dealing with this past 2 years?
Myself, I mean, I'm as opposed to other folks that are on this call, I'm in cybersecurity. So, you know, cybersecurity startups, we're doing fine. That's why I love music so much. Not only because of, you know, growing up in it, but knowing people like that are on this session.
Now, hold on. Did you say cybersecurity?
Yeah, but
is it possible that maybe some of your enemies are, I don't want to say the word F you, you know, whatever, with my stream right now?
Sabotage.
No, I hope not. But you know, I it's funny that you know, when I look back at you know, I'm 62 now, so I can look back and my brother may be on this session, my dad's brother may be on this session, I don't know, but you know, it's really interesting, because just to have a dad like that, like I go through stuff and I've got this 45, it's got a gold sleeve, you know. Wow. and it's the Capitol Records Tower, and everybody that was at the Capitol Records Tower for that grand opening party, you know, they were given one of these records. And my mom kept it, and you know, I have that, and I look at that and think, oh my gosh, you know, what a night that must have been, right? It's just things that I have from my dad that, I mean, it really blows me away in regards to, you know, even players like Greg that and Paul that like my dad, and it just, his playing just blows me away. And, you know, I played drums my whole life, but it's, you know, on a personal level, it's, I've got this thing in my head that I'm never good enough, you know, having a dad like Jimmy Bryant. I mean, it's, I've had a conversation with Jason Bonham. We were on a plane to Jamaica, and, you know, his son is the same way. His son is, he's just got this feeling, like when he goes up on stage, that it's just so much pressure, you know, even though Jason didn't have it. But so the reason why I'm sharing that is because, you know, I want people to want you guys to know a little bit more about me as well. But it's, dad was freaking incredible. I mean, just unbelievable, the stuff that and me being a drummer, I mean, I just know, you know, from living with him and just being a part of this whole, you know, history of Jimmy Bryant, I really appreciate people that come up and say, you know, things about my dad, tell me stories. But you know, it's been interesting to be Jimmy Bryant's son. And I don't say that with any ego or anything. I just say it because I've met so many great people because of it and the folks on this session. So I really appreciate you guys.
John,
I'm going to return to you 1 second. Steve is joining us. Steve, can you hear us?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, yes.
Okay.
Excellent.
Finally.
Hey, all right.
Hey, I'm going to come back to you just a second. I wanted to ask John something.
Sure.
You know, John, you were talking about that, you know, just the last few sentences you were talking about, you know, that you being humble and all that. And this is true, because I remember with the first time I met John, and I think it's also like maybe 17 years ago. I mean, it has to be either 17 or 20 years ago. But I remember it's when Seymour got me to the NAMM show. Maybe it's one of the first time when I started working with Seymour. And that week, I bought the Jimmy Bryant and Speedy West box set.
Amazing.
And it was just that week that I was listening. And, you know, it's first of all, it's the first time I was exposed to somebody, you know, Jimmy Bryant. I didn't know who it was, but I was listening to it, and I was mesmerized. And then when we got to NAMM, here you are, you know, you're coming in all smiley and pretty and beautiful women around you and all this. And Seymour says, "Hey, do you know who's this guy?" And I'm like, "No." He said, that's Jimmy Bryant's son. And I remember, you know, I froze for a second, but you were so kind, and it's almost like you came to me as I was the big deal. And I don't know, maybe because I was with Seymour, you thought I was a big deal, but I was only like a little boy in California. But I remember the first time we met, and ever since, you're very humble, you're very kind, and, you know, being the son of a legend never got to your head like, you know, maybe some others. But do you guys agree? Whoever knows John?
Yes.
Personally? Yeah. So, John, thank you for being who you are.
Well, I haven't seen you play live, and when you come over, if you get to California, that'd be awesome.
I'll be there.
Steve, man, you guys, I can't wait, you know, till this COVID goes away and we can get back to music, you know?
Yes.
Can I ask John a question?
Go ahead. Yeah. Yeah.
Very, very quickly. John, do you know what kind of gauge strings your father played and what kind of action he had on the guitar?
Oh my gosh, that is, there's no way to even know that.
Right. Okay.
You know, it's funny because I know that Ernie Ball in the 60s, you know, he thought there was a better way because he thought there was a better way to enable guitar players to only buy one string if they needed. If they break a string, they want to go in and, you know, buy a string. So he put in these in the valley, these stands that had tubes in them, the different size, you know, gauge of strings, and, you know, guitar players could buy one string. And look at, you know, where they're at now. I mean, they have three or four of the top 10 selling products in the music industry, you know, that continue to do that every year, it seems like. But back then, I mean, no way knowing what my dad had in regards to gauge, anything else, because he could play anything.
Right.
I mean, it sounds weird to say that, but he could pick up any guitar and probably sound great. And I'll share a story real quick, because he was, him and Scotty Turner were going through Arizona, and they went into this bar, and this guy was playing guitar on stage with a band. And, you know, Scotty said, "Hey, you mind if my friend sits in with you guys, you know?" And they go, "No way, man. Nobody's going to sit in with us, you know?" And then, and Scotty said it again. And the guy said, "Okay, go ahead, you know," and he gets up on stage. And, so my dad says, what do you want? You know, or they asked him, and he said, "I don't know, three flats or what, you know?" And, so they started playing, and Scotty Turner said he just ripped. I mean, just ripped. And after the song, he came off the stage, put his guitar out, and they walked out. I mean, you know, it's stories like that, that even hearing stories from Les Paul and these great guys, because it's one time Les Paul flew into Nashville. My dad never flew. He would drive his Cadillac across you know, all the way to Nashville and back. He would never fly. But he knew that Les was staying at this one hotel. So he went to that hotel and he paid this bellboy, this bellhop, you know, $20 or whatever it was to get his uniform. And when Les came up in the car, he's like kind of keeping his head down. He's, "Oh, Mr. Paul, you're such a great guitar player. You know, just, oh man, it's so great to see you. And no, let me grab your stuff." And he's walking in and carrying his stuff. And finally, Les Paul gets a glimpse of him. And they just started busting up. Those guys used to pull these jokes all the time. One time Les Paul flew into LA, back into LA. And what was it? I forget the name of the club, but my dad and Les were driving. And, you know, he goes up and Les says, "Well, who's playing there tonight?" He says, "You are. I just booked you." I mean, it's just so many stories of the days, man.
You know, speaking of Les Paul, I got a funny story about Les Paul. It was 2000, and Seymour, I wish Seymour was here because he probably would get a kick out of it. And I still lived in L.A., and then Les Paul was playing at the House of Blues on Sunset Boulevard. I think it's Sunset Boulevard, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you remember? Yeah. So anyway, so he invited us and all that. So, you know, we're and I think Slash was there and some other place. Anyway, so finally it was Les Paul and his trio. And he was playing and it was like he was all happy and all that. And all of a sudden, he got up, went backstage, and then the band is playing. And he went, I'm not talking about 20 seconds. He was gone for 5 minutes. Now, it was, I think, a month before that he had a heart attack. So Seymour and I are looking at each other. It's like, and you see the band is looking at each other too, but nobody knew what happened. And finally, Les Paul comes back into stage and he's like, "I swear to God, it's like somebody has batteries. I just lost the battery on my hearing." And there was like the front row, like an old lady was like, "I got one." But I mean, Les Paul was like this, you know, I mean, it was just a joker.
Yeah, he was.
I knew him.
He was.
Oh. Hey, Sage, you've got Mike from Ontario, Mike Granka from Ontario.
Where?
Today, hello.
I don't see him.
No, here. Just commenting in the chat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mike, what is he
Ontario,
saying?
Ontario, he's here in SoCal.
Yeah. What is Mike saying?
He's just saying hello. Wanted to let you know.
Say hi for me.
And Sandra, Leah. And Sandra.
Paul, you know, answering your question, I think, you know, and again, I won't be able to know, but just hearing the tone of Jimmy, I will say it has to be either 13 or 14.
You know, that's why I asked, you know, there's a moment when Hendrix is playing at the Royal Albert Hall, and just before he plays Stone Free, he plays an open E chord to check he's in tune. And yeah. I've never heard a fatter sound in my life. Like, it's nothing to do with pedals.
No.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan is known for using a 13 and tune it down to E flat.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the fattest, heaviest, thickest sound. But you can hear the pickups, you can hear the strings, you can hear the wood in the guitar, you can hear the amp, you can hear the cab. You know, it's like, and when I hear Jimmy Bryant play, I kind of get that vibe that there's some real heavy duty strength in the hands and fascinating stuff. So, you know, John, I'm really grateful to be able to ask you that question and I appreciate your attempts to answer it. I bought that CD, Jimmy Bryant and Speedy West. I don't know why I bought this CD. And I think I paid like £2.50 for it. I don't know why I bought it. I heard Speedy West on the radio or something like that. And I thought, oh, there's a CD on eBay for a couple of quid, you know. So I buy this CD. And I just, it's like 1947 or something. It's like, so, and it's like, this is like Malmsteen in the 40s, you know?
Yes. Yes, I know.
But better. But better, forgive me. Yeah. But better. I'm sorry, Yngwie.
Yeah. Steve, I will get to you in a second, but I want to say something continuing on that subject of the heavy strings. I'm going to say something, and it's kind of like a breaking news kind of a thing. And Paul, you're going to enjoy that. Mm. Greg, probably you too. One of the things that I've been working on for the past 3 years with Eric, and I'm not going to say too much about it, but when it comes out, one of the many, many things you could do, you're going to be able to get that fat, maybe Jimmy Bryant strings without changing your strings.
Oh, that would be useful.
Okay, so just hold on and wait. But yes, you know, it's you'll be able to. Steve, are you with us? Oh, there's Seymour. Let me see. Hold on. Sir. Seymour, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Hello, Seymour. Welcome back.
Oh, but there's some echo going on.
Welcome back.
But I tried it through Chrome, and I still couldn't get in. So.
Okay, but we can hear you. That's good. So, Seymour, let me just ask Steve a question because he's been here, and finally he got rid of his alien voice, and he sounds like human right now.
Oh, boy.
How you doing, Steve?
All right. Can you hear me fine? Can you hear me fine?
Yes. Yeah, we can hear you. We'll see for how long, but we can hear you fine.
Right. All right,
So what's been going on with you for the past 2 years?
Yeah, long story short, last year I released my first solo album, Amplitude. Oh. And don't know if you can see it here, but crazy time, you know, obviously releasing a record during COVID, and I haven't been able to really tour or do any shows for it, to promote it.
Perfect time releasing it, right?
I know, yeah, it's been a real drag, but I've been working on my second solo album, and Mr. Steve Trovato is playing on it.
Oh, that's great. And, you know, we were supposed to have Steve, and he has some difficulties logging on.
Yeah.
And also Richard Bennett, so, you know, I'm really sorry we couldn't have them, but yeah.
Yeah, man. But I'm fixing to release my second solo album here, and just looking forward to that. And I'm hoping I get to play some shows to kind of promote it, you know.
I think we're all kind of ready to have just a smell of music, you know.
Yes,
absolutely. We all miss it.
Smell of tubes burning.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Where do you live, Steve?
Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. So Seymour, you were saying something, and then you said Les Paul, and then we lost you.
Can you hear me now still?
Yes. 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 Yeah.
Okay, I'll do this quick. Anyway, I was a young kid, and I was invited to see this musician, you know, and the stage opened up, and they were playing How High the Moon, and it was Les Paul and Mary Ford. So anyway, I watched whole show and blah blah blah, and Mary had this beautiful, like a pinkish white dress, you know, just beautiful looking. And after the show, my Uncle Bid said, "Come on." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Come on, we're gonna go backstage." So I went back, and I started to look all around, and there's all this stacked reel-to-reel tape recorders and everything. And so I went over and I said, "Hi, Mr. Paul." I said, "I just love the show, you know." And he says, "Are you a guitar player?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm trying to learn and everything." So we sat there on this little bench, and he drew out how the pickup worked and everything, and I was like fascinated by it. You know, he drew the magnet and coil wire, and he hooked this up and he put it under the string. And he said, "Do you know why a magnet is inside a guitar pickup?" And I looked, my dad looked, and we all said, "No, not really." Does anybody out there know why there's a magnet in a guitar pickup?
Nope. Pulling the vibration and the overtones of the vibrated strings?
Well, what it is he said it was to magnetize the string. So when the string that was magnetized would move across the coil, it would induce a current, and that's how you get the sound coming out of a guitar pickup, which is really kind of neat. So I studied that, and then I saw this gear, this little black box on his guitar. And I said, "Mr. Paul, what is that black box with the buttons on it on your guitar for?" He says, "Son," he said, "that's what I call a pulverizer." And what it is it was a little box where he could control the tape recorders that weren't behind the stage that nobody could see. You know, so he could hit a button, rewind the tape, and then hit another button and play another track on the recorder. And then that would, you know, he could do the multi-tracking that way. And he was doing it on stage. So he played a rhythm part, go back, and then you go diddle it, diddle it, diddle it, diddle it, diddle it, diddle it. So, and then that would be added to it. And then he could do dear, 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 with all this stuff in the background playing, which was so cool. And when you're a 12, 13 year old kid and you see that, you're just like totally amazed. You know, I mean, I was amazed by it. And then, but somewhere in my storage, I still have the drawing he did of how a pickup worked and everything, which was so cool, you know.
Wow.
And for me, and then years later, I had a neighbor who broke into her house, and I had all my 45s on a rack in the basement, and some kid took them and used them for frisbees and threw them down this hill, and they were all stuck in the tree, all my Les Paul Mary Ford records and everything, you know. So later on, I wrote Les and Mr. Paul, and I said, "Mr. Paul, you know, are you going to re-release the old records again?" You know, I told him what happened. And about 3 months later, I got three box sets from Capitol with, there was three or four albums in each box that had all the recordings on it. So it was like so neat. So I still have all that stuff. So I got a lot of cool memorabilia from him, you know. So for me, that was really a cool story, you know, which I love.
You know, Simon, when we lost you a second ago, I told the guys the story. Do you remember when we went to see Les Paul at the House of Blues in L.A. and he lost his battery when on his hearing aid, and he went out behind stage?
Yep. And what was funny, he said, "Does anybody out there have a hearing aid battery?" And it was all quiet. And all of a sudden, I do. and this little lady actually had one that would fit his hearing aid, and it was pretty amazing that somebody had it, you know, out there. And and the lady was Skunk Baxter's mother.
Oh, that was her.
Oh, was her.
That was her. Whoa. Oh, that's funny.
That was her.
Yep. Oh, that's,
I know,
funny.
It's like, holy my
that's funny. Do we have anybody else new over here? No, it's all the same. So, Greg, what's your next, what's tomorrow? Are you at like 5 a.m.? Do your 50
Saturday.
Second?
Tomorrow's Saturday, so I'm free.
Oh, you're free?
Yes, which would be great.
Oh, I got you.
Well, so to speak. But we're just putting the finishing touches on our next record with the trio that I have with my son and the organ player.
Right.
But we're trying to figure, you know, we're getting all the artwork done and we're getting it all locked and loaded, and I'm figuring when's the best time to release it, because as Steve was saying, it's no use putting out a record if you can't go out and promote it per se. So we're kind of in the midst of just getting that ready to rock, and then I have another True Fire course coming out. I had to proofread the tab stuff today, and so that's coming out soon. I got a bunch of shows coming up in February, but I'm very, you know,
leery about it.
Great, yeah, leery. Leery is the word. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I'd love to do them, but you know, if it doesn't make sense to do them, I'm not going to do them. So, but then there's dealing with that.
Great.
No.
Great. Sorry. Are you able to do a live broadcast over YouTube?
Oh yeah. We've been doing all that stuff. That's been great. In the quality, the sound quality, and the camera. It sounds great. Looks great. So. We can definitely do that, and we've been continuing to do that. So we released one record during COVID, and you know, we promoted it on the streams, and we did fine. I mean, it went great, and we're, you know, this time I'm going to see if I can, you know, it's always weird hiring promo people for these records, because you know, my favorite thing about hiring a publicist, they'll call you, I'm like, okay, great, who do you know? I'm like, why do you want to know who I know? I want to know who you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Greg, you know, let me
ask you. I know.
Hey, Greg, I wanted to ask you if you still had your giant guitar pick I gave you at NAMM a few years ago.
You know, I probably do have that somewhere. I remember that doggone thing. God bless you.
Hey, Greg, you know, you're talking about releasing your album and you don't know if you're going to have any shows to promote it. Can't you do your live shows on what it's called, nugs.net?
Well, you know, with the live thing, we tried to suss out what was the best way to do all the different stuff. You know, when I'm sure you guys have all gone through this of figuring out what's the best way to do shows. Is it doing a gated stream someplace or doing whatever else? And we just figured that, you know, when we go live simultaneously on Facebook, YouTube, we got a Twitch thing and all that other kind of crap. So,
right.
And we reach a good amount of people and the sales have been great. I really can't complain. So, you know, I'm not afraid to release it again that way, but at the same token, if I know that there's going to be a potential, you know, because I have a sinking, well, not a sinking feeling. I got a pretty good feeling that this wave is going to kind of rise and then fade out.
That's what I'm thinking.
And then what this thing, you know, is that if this Omicron is going to make everybody less susceptible to the more virulent strains in terms of the severity of disease, well, then hopefully that means that, you know, maybe in spring gigs will start happening again.
Right.
That is, of course, if, you know, some other kind of hellacious pestilence doesn't develop. But
well, yeah, now they're talking about a new one in France. So God knows what that is. But I guess we'll see. But hey, but you know of nugs.net?
No, I'm not familiar with that one.
Okay. Well, I didn't know about it, too, until I stumbled upon it. It's a website that you actually sell tickets to live stream your shows. And there's some major bands over there. I'm not talking about like a D class band. I'm talking about like,
right.
You know. So try that because I mean you can literally sell a live stream show.
Bandcamp has a facility that you can do that with as well.
Bandcamp. Well, the only problem I find with that is that in my situation, since I do so many live streams a week that are free,
yes,
right,
that
trying to get people to go to a gated stream at that point, I'm better off doing a stream where I know people will tune in and then they can tip as much as they want. And to be honest, they've been pretty generous. Of course, I think everyone knows the story that when it first started. When COVID first started, like the first 6 months, you know, the streams were like, we're making so much money. You're like, why would I ever play out again? You know? And then at some point it got to the point where, you know, we still make good money, but it's not as much.
Yeah.
And people are still generous and, you know, it's decent money. I mean, it's still, you know, for most people, it's better than they would make, you know, at a club gig locally, but,
I'm sure the vibe is different.
You know, I thought of the whole gated thing, and it makes sense if you're able to, you know, again, because I do so much free stuff, it's hard to drive people to a gated thing. And then there's only X amount of people going to that. Whereas if I do something that goes live and I have my tip information on there, I get money rolling in, you know, in perpetuity. You know what I mean? People see it.
One of the things about the streaming that I've found is, as much as I love it and I enjoy it enormously, and so do the people who tune in, it seems, is having the ability to refresh the set every week. You know, I've got like, I don't know, 50 or 60 backing tracks, and you try it. Well, I'll try and do those numbers that I did that number last week. I better not do that this week. And my initial idea with the streams were to bring people in, to have a bass player, a drummer and a keyboard player in here. And I started streaming about 3 years ago. I'd had no one had even heard of bloody COVID-19, you know. So this whole situation happens. And it's like, well, I didn't expect to be sitting here alone for 3 years playing the guitar. You know, I wanted people to come in and join me. So I'm kind of like, I think the UK, I know you've got different states in the US have dealt with this in different ways, but we've got a bit of a, not wanting to get into politics, but we've got a bit of a cavalier prime minister here who kind of, you know, is prepared to do anything basically without. Right, I don't say any more about that point.
Yeah, probably.
So we're kind of opening up. We're kind of opening up. And we have done some shows in Germany. We've played in Netherlands. We played in Spain. And we played in Belgium, you know. And right. It's the craziest thing. I mean, you're wondering if the gig's going to be cancelled the day before. Let me tell you. I'll tell you one story. You have to have this. The first time we travelled, you have to have this test. Okay, and it has to be 24 hours before the flight leaves the tarmac. Okay, right. So the drummer and I did the test in London the day before we travelled, and they wouldn't let us get on the plane because the test was 2 minutes outside of the 24-hour restriction.
Are you kidding me?
No, that's the truth. That's the absolute truth.
Well, you know, I was supposed to fly and see my mom. I haven't seen my mom for 2 years, and I've canceled my flight 3 times. For me, flying from the U.S. all the way to Israel, we have to do a 72 hours test before we even get to the airport. So, you know, and I'm kind of thinking, okay, well, I do a 72 hours before. What happened if I got with somebody a day after I did the test, you know, and then I'm going to be on a plane for 12 hours, which it's another half a day of incubation. So, I mean, I just don't get it. I don't know, but it's just, it makes traveling such a, you know, that's why I'm, you know, I don't fly domestic. I think Greg, you know, I mean, I'm sure Seymour knows and some of the other, I got my little RV and I just drive. You know, I think flying became such a hassle that it's almost like if you can do it without flying, that's the best way. And
I agree.
I haven't flown for 5 years domestically.
Another great thing where they say this, you know, you landed wherever, Frankfurt or London, and they say, please try to observe social distancing when leaving the aeroplane.
You know?
And we get on this bus on the tarmac, you know, we get on the bus to go back to the terminal, and we're like this, you know, like sardines in a can. You know?
Oh my God.
Yeah, and please observe social distancing. It's insanity.
It's ridiculous. You know? I know. I know there's one thing Seymour is missing is courtside Arizona.
Oh yeah, that's this week too.
It is. I don't know if a lot of people over here know. You know, Seymour does Arrowheads. You guys know about it?
No.
Arrowheads.
No? Oh, come on. You didn't send Greg some Arrowheads and stuff?
I can, yeah.
Yeah, Seymour does Arrowheads. Like, you know, I mean, he takes them from, you know, they get the rocks and makes Arrowheads.
I remember, Seymour, I remember you told me that you shared an interest in this with Danny Gatton. He was interested in this as well. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yeah, a long time ago, yes.
Gatton, well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we used to go arrowhead hunting together up in Canada and everything, and we had a great time. So,
wow.
Miss him, too.
Yeah, right.
Miss him, Roy Buchanan. Jeez, you know, man.
I know.
One more hero.
So, Seymour, what is that thing that, you know, if you have to go back, that changed your life as far as music, that either something you heard or you saw that was like, it's like an explosion?
Well for me, it was James Burton on the Ozzy and Harriet show. You know, at the end, Ricky would sing a song and he would come out. And then there was like Duane Eddy on the Dick Clark show way back out of Philadelphia. And my first record I was ever given by my uncle, who taught me my first chords, Howard Duncan, that was my dad's brother, was Jimmy Bryant and Speedy West, two guitars, country style. And then and my uncle said, boy, if you can play like this, you're a guitar player. And to this day, I still can't play like that, you know. I mean, that, you know, it was just phenomenal playing, you know, and back in 53, they were doing this stuff, you know. It was incredible, you know. And
yeah,
but you know, all the telly guys, you know, Jimmy Bryant, then there was Neil Levang, who was on the Lawrence Welk show. He was another big influence. Why? Because you could see him. I was lived in a country, and we had three TV channels, and I could watch it, you know. So that was about it. There was a couple other stories in between, but those guys were my big influence, you know. Chet Atkins, of course, you know.
Steve, what about you?
So that was it.
Oh, goodness. Oh, man. As far as influences, yeah, Chet Atkins, for sure. I mean, golly. Him, I liked, of course, Tommy Emmanuel, amazing player. You know, I love him.
Right.
Dwayne Eddy, I got to meet him at NAMM a couple of years ago, a few years back. That was awesome. Of course, I grew up on him. The first song I ever learned to play was Rebel Rouser. That was that was it. I loved it, you know. And, of course, I've been hooked ever since. And, yeah, for those of you guys that may not know, I have a cousin that owns Georgetown Masters, a mastering studio here in town in Nashville. And Tom Bresch told me a silly story about him one time that I'd like to share with you. You know, and some of this newer country stuff, kind of the rap country stuff kind of coming out, you know, my cousin didn't like that stuff very much. You know, it wasn't like his favorite kind of music.
Right.
So Tom Bresch said he walked in my cousin's mastering studio one afternoon, and there's my cousin Denny working. Tom says, "What's up? What's going on?" And my cousin says, "Well, the music sucks, but it sounds great." And I'll appreciate him sharing that story with me. I've always loved hearing the stories about my cousin there back in the day. But
that's cool.
It was funny.
That's cool. I'm going over the list over here. Paul, what was the thing that changed your life?
There was two things. And I don't know which was the most powerful. They were both dynamite. A friend of mine brought over a Hendrix album. It's the white album cover with a painting of Jimmy sitting on a stool playing the 12-string acoustic.
Yeah, from the movie.
From the movie, correct.
Yeah.
And the Star Spangled Banner on that particular record is cut. And the first thing you hear is the open B string. And then the G sharp, and then the E. Do, do, do. And there was no lead into it. There was no, you know, like when you see the movie, he's improvising and he's jamming, right. And then he's, it was cut. The tape was cut on the front of that open B string of that descending E major triad. And I thought to myself, Jesus Christ almighty, what's this? I was not prepared. You know, every other guitar player I'd heard had some kind of, I'd never heard such rawness and wildness as that, you know.
Right.
The second thing would be Richie Blackmore's Black Knight, the live Black Knight from Made in Japan, where he's doing that feedback.
Yeah. Yes.
And I was like 13-year-old, and my brother thought we were being invaded by aliens. It's just, what the fuck's going on? What's that noise? It's Richie Blackmore. But a quick story. Living in Newcastle, this is Chas Chandler's hometown, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And Chas Chandler found Hendrix. Okay, so I went to school with Chas Chandler's nephew. And he told me a few stories. And when Chas brought Jimmy over to London, he had to come to Newcastle to sell some basses to fund the project. So Jimmy lived in Newcastle, right, for like 2 weeks. And there's houses with signs saying Jimi Hendrix lived here for, you know, Jimi Hendrix played here. And while they were up here in Newcastle, Chas took Jimmy to a bar in a part of town called Shieldfield, and Jimmy played one set, And I've, between the second, between the first set and the second set, the committee man who ran the club went up to Chaz with the £5 or the whatever it would be, small fee, and he said to Chaz, he gave Chaz the £5, and he says, "We don't want the second set. It's shite."
Oh my god, that's funny.
Yeah,
John. I know you're not a guitar player, you're a drummer, but still, you know, you're a musician. So what was the thing that changed your life? That,
you know, there just isn't one, because I've been in around the business my whole life. But I will say, Paul, that I was stationed over in England for 3 years between 89 to 92. Mm-hmm. And not one of the good things was I lived right near Alan White, you know,
right. Drummer.
Yes, and yeah. Him and Gigi got married, and but we'd sit in his backyard, and that was just so much fun, because when they got married, just everybody came over. You know,
right.
Jimmy Page. I was standing waiting to go to the loo, and I turn around, Jimmy Page is behind me. I didn't know what to say. I mean, I was only 19 years old, right? And mm-hmm. The only thing I could say is, "Oh, do you know Jimmy Bryant?" And he says, "Oh yeah, he's brilliant from Nashville." Yeah. And I said, "Yeah, that's my dad." And
right.
So, and that's it. I could not say anything more. But the thing was, we would just drive into London, like Hammersmith right. Odeon.
Oh,
and
yeah.
we'd show up just to see who's playing. You know, all of a sudden you'd see Deep Purple.
Yeah,
you know, wow. These great bands. I mean, it was just such a great time. But I mean, also it was the punks and the skinheads, and mm-hmm. you know, that was a weird time. But it just, I loved being in England. I'd love to get up to where you're at. I mean, I did get up to Scotland and Edinburgh, but I guess I missed you on that trip. So,
well, if you're in the area, you're welcome. My name's Rose, and it's a Scottish name. I descend from the north, and I highly recommend, if you're interested, Van Halen opened for Black Sabbath on the UK tour in 1978 when the first album had just come out. Okay, and the sound man recorded them because he knew what was going to happen. Right. So you've got all these people who've gone to see Black Sabbath, and they've got some Dutch heavy metal band. That's what the vibe was before the show. Oh, it's some Dutch heavy metal band opening for Sabbath. And the sound man was recording these shows, right? Now, if you go on YouTube and put Van Halen Hammersmith Odeon 78, and you listen to that show, it's incredible. It's unbelievable. That band was so tight, and Eddie was everything about it's brilliant. And there's London, there's Ipswich, Newcastle, Manchester. And those shows where Van Halen are opening for Sabbath, and like literally they knew the first album had just come out, nobody knew who they were.
And wow, that's cool.
There was only three channels when I was over there on TV.
That's right.
And then the fourth one came, ATV or whatever. But
yeah.
There was a Friday night rock show mm-hmm. on radio
right.
every Friday night. And I would record those on cassettes. And we were all partying, you know, us GIs in my house. And all of a sudden, this guy comes on that radio show when we were over there in England, and they said, "Oh, I just want to see, you know, introduce a new band out of LA." And I told everybody, wait, you know, who is this? You know, said, "This is a band called Van Halen." And they started playing that, and we just went crazy.
Right.
But I still have that cassette, that recording mm-hmm. of that.
You'll have it?
Radio and it was just incredible to hear Van Halen for the first time. But
let me tell you, and I don't want to take anybody else's time, but I just want to share this thing with you. A guy said to me, "I've got a ticket for Black Sabbath at Newcastle. Do you want it?" And I went, "No, not interested. I don't like Tony Iommi and I don't like Ozzy Osbourne." Well, I was like 14, right? 13 or 14. The next day, everybody was talking about the support band. It was Van Halen. This guy said to me, he said, I sat in the front row for the Black Sabbath gig, and he says there was a Marshall cabinet with no vinyl on it, a 4x12 cab with no vinyl on it, a 100-watt head on it. And he said, and I sat and I looked at this amp, and I just thought, it's the support act, it's the opening act, it's irrelevant. It was Eddie Van Halen's gear. And nobody knew that in 30 seconds, Edward Van Halen was going to walk out onto that stage and absolutely obliterate everybody. And the last thing I'll say about it, I'm so disappointed I didn't take that ticket. My friend was the biggest Black Sabbath fan in the world. Like, Sabbath, 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 that's all he cared about. And the bar at Newcastle City Hall is in the basement. And he's in the bar, and he's heard a rumour that there's a Dutch heavy metal band opening for Sabbath. Well, who gives a shit about that, right? So he says, I have never walked away from a pint in my life. He says, we heard that band open up upstairs, and he said it was like there someone had said a bomb was going to go off in that bar. He says, they were running up the stairs to get into the auditorium. And people were leaving for the Sabbath gig. People weren't staying for Sabbath. They were so blown away by this new guy, this new band with the singer and everything. So anyway, that's just a story. And I was offered a ticket for that show. The recording of that is on YouTube as well. Van Halen, Newcastle City Hall, 78. Oh, what cool. The big regret.
Greg, what about you?
I would have to say, I roomed with my brother who was, who's 14 years older than I am, and there were five girls in between. So my brother and I roomed together. I was just a little punk. And for some reason, I started listening to his Hendrix records really early on. I was absolutely fascinated with Hendrix. And we only had a few of them. He had Band of Gypsies. He posthumously released Cry of Love. And he had Axis Bold as Love. When I was a little kid, when I still took naps, I would force my sisters to put on Axis Bold as Love so I could, that's what I needed to listen to before I would go to sleep. But I remember I would talk to my brother, like, who is this guy? And he's like, listen, you don't know anything until you hear Electric Ladyland. And he would talk about this record like it was the Scrolls. You know what I mean? Like it was the secret of all humanity. So I remember he went out to a party one night, and he came home and he had borrowed Electric Ladyland from one of his buddies. And so here I am, this punk kid, and I'm waking up, and the first thing I hear is Still Raining, Still Dreaming the Wall. Wow, wow. And I remember it to this day. And I remember just going, brushing my teeth, just going, what did I just hear? Mm-hmm. And I came back, and then that's when I knew I was destined to do that. I don't know when it was going to happen, but I was going to do that. And another time when my brother was, he used to sit down front of his little record player, and he would, listen reverentially to whoever he was listening to. And I was with my young buddies, and we were running around the house playing Guns or whatever you do at that age. And I walked in, and my brother's sitting in front of the stereo, and I was like, what are you doing? And he looked at me. He goes, this is Jack Bruce, Ginger Baker, and Eric Clapton, collectively known as The Cream, the greatest band in the history of the world. And I just remember hearing that and just going, oh my God. So I wanted to play like Premier Clapton and Hendrix. That's what I wanted. And then I started reading, I got this Hendrix book, when I was in third grade, I did a report on Jimi Hendrix. And I remember reading this thing, and they were mentioning, Muddy Waters and B.B. King and Howlin' Wolf and Albert King. And so I knew that I had to check out these other people as well. So Hendrix was really the thing that made me want to play. And to me, Hendrix was cooler. The idea of the musician, especially the guitar player, it wasn't like, they're like metaphysicians. You know what I mean? They were communicating with the astral plane. You know what I mean? They were cooler than any sports figure or movie star or whatever the case may be. I mean, they were like cooler than anybody, So that's really what made me want to pursue it. And I've been suffering ever since. I'm just kidding.
That's funny. That's cool. Eric,
so listen, John, sorry. On that note, I unfortunately I have to get going, but
okay.
It was so much fun hanging out with all you guys. Paul, great to meet you.
On you.
Again, Seymour, and of course, Sage, great to see you.
And thank you, man. And always we'll be a pleasure in touch to with see you soon. You
as well. It's been a long time, my friend, and hope to see you all again soon. Eric, take it easy.
Yes.
You too. Good to meet you.
Hey, likewise. Thanks, Greg, and I'll be in touch with you soon. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Have a good one, gentlemen. Bye-bye.
Take care, Greg. Good night. Good night.
John, you're not the only drummer in here. So Eric is a drummer too.
Right.
So Eric, to you now, what was the thing that changed your life?
There's some similar themes to what you guys were saying in a sense, because hearing some of the bands that you guys mentioned, I grew up in this pretty musical household, and so there was a good bit of the good old jazz from the 50s that on the records my dad had, and folk music. He's family's from the Tennessee, Virginia area, so we had a lot of really good folk music growing up. And then I was born in the 60s, so that means that I was listening to the pop radio and the bands coming out in the 70s and so on. So some of the same folks, I'm a drummer. I was drawn to that when I was really, really young. I ended up carving a pair of drumsticks out of a broom handle when I was a little kid. So it was kind of going to happen. But so I was attracted to some of the same folks, like Ian Paice for Deep Purple. He's just one of all-time heroes. He's got chops. He's just unreal. And also folks like, of course, Alex Van Halen. He's one of those guys that has crazy chops, but he has also really great taste. And that's also, that's one of the really important things that's always attracted me to the music that I like is the song and the talent that can go into creating this song and this whole feeling and so on. So there's that, but then there's other folks. There's a lot of studio guys from back in the day. There's Steve Gadd, there's Peter Erskine, there's a lot of drummers I would seek out, and I'd go to a lot of clinics. Atlanta was great in the 80s, I guess it was the late 80s and 90s. They would have these top-notch drummers that would come through and do clinics, some of the best bands of the day, like Rod Morgenstein, killer drummer from the Dregs. So those type of guys, and then also folks that supported people that were on the radio at the time, maybe somewhat of a lesser-known person, Robert Ellis, who played for PJ Harvey back in the day. Really good taste, but good chops. And then who else? There's just pretty varied taste. So, I can't say that there's any one that stands out as the absolute favorite, but a lot went into the mixture.
I got you. Before I'll share mine, if anybody interested, I do have kind of like a drum story. It was maybe 14 years ago. My wife and I went to Watercolor. Do you guys know what Watercolor is in Florida? Right next to Seaside. Okay. Never been there. Okay. It's literally right next to Seaside. So anyway, so we went on vacation, and there was a club there. I think it's called the Red House or something. So it was like a restaurant with live music. So we went there because we wanted to have something that has live music. So there was like a small trio band there, and they were playing kind of like a jazz funk kind of a thing, and somehow I was drawn to the drummer because the groove that was going on there was out of this world. And then at the end of the show, I kind of like asked the who's that band, and she said, "That's James Brown, drummer." And I was like, "You are kidding me." And he was nice. I mean, I called him and all that. And Seymour, if you can hear me. Oh, he left. But I think Seymour knew him. And I told him, I said, "Hey, I'm Seymour Duncan, assistant." And he says hello. But he was very, he was so nice. He sat down with us, and but man, his drumming was out of this world. I remember for almost an hour and a half, I was mesmerized.
That's an awesome groove, isn't it?
Yes, yes. So if we go to, you know, what changed my life as far as music and guitar, and I'm almost embarrassed to say because you guys over here mentioned some hot shots and heavy rock and stuff. But as a young kid, you know, around 10, is that when I kind of like started getting into guitar, and David Gilmour was the thing for me.
Great.
But then one day on the radio, I heard that really beautiful melody on a nylon string, not on electric guitar. And when that tune was over, the disc jockey was saying that was Mark Knopfler from the movie Local Hero. And if you guys remember that soundtrack, it's not the Local Hero that everybody remember with the electric guitar that later on comes with drums and all that. The second track on that album, it's like a classical guitar with a piano. And that sound, and I think it might have even been an Ovation acoustic. I can't remember, but it does sound like, or maybe Ovation nylon string. But Paul, if you have a chance to dig out the soundtrack Local Hero, go for the second track on the album.
Okay.
That thing changed my life.
Right.
From that point and on.
Yeah.
And of course, it was always a Gilmour Knopfler thing for me forever. Mm-hmm. But the thing that draw me into that melodic, that really nice melody, the soft touch, was that tune, the second track on the Local Hero album. That's what changed my life.
Mark Knopfler's from literally just 2 miles up the road from here. So, you know, Spanish City's 3 miles that way, and Mark Knopfler's house is 2 miles that way. So, but we've never met. We've never met.
And you never met. Well, you here's a funny story with Seymour, and Seymour probably remember that. You know, I mean, Seymour met and knew everybody.
Of course.
And then he worked, you know, he did stuff for Mark Knopfler forever. So here I am, a little kid from Israel, right, becoming Seymour, a personal assistant. And Seymour never physically met Mark back in the 80s. It was always through some, you know, mailing stuff. But, I mean, they always talk. And somehow I was able to meet Mark, thanks to Seymour. But then Seymour flew to England. Seymour, when was it? Like 2006? 5, maybe? Oh, we lost him again. So, yeah, Seymour, we can't hear you somehow. I don't know why. But anyway, I was able to get Seymour and Mark meet for the first time, physically meet for the first time. And I mean, that blew me away. I mean, it's like Seymour knows everybody and he's been working with him forever and ever. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of a cool thing. But yeah, Seymour was in England. I think first time after the 70s, right, Seymour? Yeah, I don't know why we can't hear him. We lost him again.
Strange. Very strange.
Let me try to get him back. Can you try again, Seymour? No, we can't hear him. Ah, darn it. But yeah, but you know, I think it was the first time after the 70s, after Seymour came back from England, it was the first time since then. I think in 2000, I can't remember, maybe 5, 4. So anyway, guys, I can stay here forever, but I want to make it kind of sweet and not get people bored and all that. But is there anything that anyone want to say before we close it for the night?
Can I say it's 1 a.m. here in England, so I really must go. But although Seymour, you can't hear us, we can't hear you. Can I just say, Seymour, it's great to see you again. I haven't seen you for a couple of years, well, several years, and I hope we'll catch up on the other side of the Atlantic, and then, well, maybe this year.
Absolutely. Steve, you want to say something before we go?
Yeah. Thanks, guys. It's been great hanging out with you. And yeah, man, I'll keep you all posted on my new record and everything. Sure. And thank you guys so much for having me on.
Thank you, man.
John, nice to meet you, Steve.
Yeah.
John?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Good to meet you. I'm glad Paul and Steve got your emails.
Great. So
we'll stay in touch. And Paul, if you know, I definitely want to get over to England. I haven't been back since. And that's a goal of mine for sure. You know, Mark Knopfler called the house one time when I was maybe 20 or 20 something. And, and he says, this is Mark Knopfler. I said, what are you, even? No, it's not, you know? And he wanted to know how Dad tuned, the Stratosphere Boogie, right. The guitar for Stratosphere Boogie, 12 string. I said, hey man, I'm a drummer. I have no idea. So we have to meet him at the pub and, you know, tell him that story. But Eric, nice to meet you. Just Seymour, I sort of want to, you know, jump on Paul's comment that we all love you, man. And it's you are the kind of guy that, man, everybody when we see you, your friends, just we value your friendship. And you've always been gracious to us, and so thank you very much. And Sage, thanks for having us, man. I really appreciate it.
You're
great
welcome.
Talking to all of you.
Yeah, and Eric, want to say something before we all go?
Sure, yeah. I really appreciate meeting everybody and talking with you. Sage, thanks for putting this on and inviting me. It was really good.
You're welcome. And then let's see if Seymour can hear him again. Seymour, can you say something? Seymour? I guess he can't.
I think he's lost us now as well.
So anyway, I'm going to close it. And first of all, thank everybody that joined us tonight and you guys around the world, whoever watched it. I mean, I really appreciate that. And we'll try to do it better next time with some technical difficulties. You know, I know I have ton more questions for the people that are here, and I could go here for another 5 hours, but you know, we have to make it sweet and short. And I hope that maybe you guys want to come back again and do it again.
I'd love to.
But until then, let's stay safe. Seymour, can you hear us? He can't. So until then, let's stay safe. And you guys take care of yourself. You know, just do whatever you can to protect yourself. And I really hope we can see each other sometime soon, because I miss you all, guys. Really miss you. Okay, guys.
Thank you.
I love you. And thanks, then we'll do it again sometime soon.
Good night, everybody.
All right, see you. Good night.
See you soon.
Bye.
John, send me an email. Send me
you
an
got
email.
Got it, buddy.
Brilliant. All right. Take care, folks. Good
see
night.
Steve.
See you guys.
See you guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.